Welcome to I Pledge Allegiance, a podcast where we talk to founders building at the frontier of crypto. I'm super excited about this podcast for a few reasons. One, this week we're actually joined by Miles, who I work with at Reverie. He's appearing on this podcast for the first time. And two, we are talking about a topic that is super hot right now, rollups. And there's been lots of takes and lots of thoughts. And we've heard a lot from people building rollup frameworks, the Optimisms, Arbitrums of the world. I think they've done an amazing job talking about their story. We've heard a little bit less from folks building the products that are actually helping these chains launch. And what I'm talking about is, a lot of you guys know, is Rollup as a Service. Conduit is one of the companies that's leading this trend. They've been heavily involved with a lot of the launches on the OP stack. And in general, a really interesting product. And so that's why I'm excited to welcome two guests today. One is Andrew, the founder of Conduit, and Brandon, who is an independent researcher and infrastructure enthusiast. So, and without further ado, welcome Andrew and Brandon.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and excited to chat more.
This is a great topic and I think we're going to have some fun.
Awesome. So maybe starting with Andrew, you're the one building a company specifically in the rollup space. Like, can you give us a sort of quick background on how you decided to tackle this specific problem of packaging rollups? It's like a very, very specific problem set solving a huge need, but like, how did you get there?
Yeah, definitely. So I think there's a bit of background influence here. I don't know how far we want to go back, but I think in terms of like the hard skills that I think it takes to pull something like this off, it's probably a mix of infrastructure as well as I think like product design or just like good product thinking. And I really think I owe that to my kind of prior work experiences. The first company that I worked at is a company called Wish. I don't know if too many people know about it, but it was a mobile commerce, kind of e-commerce shopping app, super big a couple years ago. Now kind of more of a penny stock. But at the time I joined, it was kind of taking off like a rocket ship. And I think it was there that I really gained an appreciation for like scale and like infrastructure, and kind of what it takes to kind of deliver something that's reliable, scalable, and, you know, going to power experiences for users and customers. And then after that, I ended up joining an early stage company called Quill. I have a bit of a soft spot for like good product. And the founder was the first designer at Stripe. And kind of the goal here was to build a better version of Slack. Joined as an early engineer, ended up leading engineering and product. And kind of an interesting experience there was getting to play around with like GPT APIs before the current craze. And I guess the interesting feature that made the app feel alive was something around auto thread titling. So the main differentiator for Quill was, you know, instead of sending just messages into a channel, every kind of message or every kind of new conversation is its own thread. And so by kind of auto titling the thread based off of the content, it kind of felt a little bit more like chat. I think it was the combination of those two experiences. One, kind of on the very, I would say, like engineering heavy side of high scale infrastructure, high stakes, to kind of very customer centric thinking on the product side. That to me felt like a really interesting intersection, like a powerful intersection for starting Conduit. And I think, you know, what Conduit is ultimately is a kind of an infrastructure platform. Today, you know, we're allowing folks to launch their own rollups, but I think a really key part and something that I think is kind of missing in the market today, besides maybe Conduit, is that, you know, I think we really emphasize like developer experience, making sure that folks can use the platform self-serve and that everything just works out of the box. And I think kind of that razor focus on customer centricity, as well as making sure that the infrastructure that's powering all of this is really, really excellent to kind of power that experience, I think has been one, our North Star, but two, I think really a unique advantage, especially as we've been kind of going to market here.
Really great introduction on your background. I think folks have a general conception of what rollup as a service is. It helps people launch new chains, obviously. Can you go a little bit more into what it actually entails and what are the missing gaps that it fills that isn't available otherwise?
Yeah, definitely. I think the closest analogy that I really have is, you know, I think in some ways it's kind of the cloud moment for crypto. And you know, I remember when I was like a kid, you know, my dad was starting like a finance company or like a trading company. And I think they were ahead of their time in terms of using technology and like computing models to build simulations and to kind of trade off of that. But this was like in the early 2000s, and to actually run these simulations and these models, they needed to like rent a huge office. They needed like dedicated space to put this hardware. They needed to spend like millions up front to like purchase that hardware. They needed to like hire a dude to actually like wire it all up and like make sure, you know, it was working. And I think like AWS and the Web2 cloud really paved the way for, you know, just being a platform for all sorts of companies to exist that otherwise, you know, it would have been very difficult to. And I think they made getting VMs in the cloud much, much easier. Instead of paying everything up front, you could rent based off of your usage. And I think ultimately just made the experience much easier and much cheaper. And I think there's really kind of a very similar moment going on in crypto today where, you know, I think really for the first time, you're able to run off-chain compute in a way that's verifiable on-chain. And I think it is difficult to run these in production. I think even the teams developing the software are kind of like figuring out the best way to do it. And like traditionally, crypto software just hasn't been built in a way for, you know, real like high availability or like reliability. Typically, you know, for a decentralized network like Ethereum, you get HA just by running many decentralized nodes. But, you know, for a lot of rollups with a centralized sequencer or just like one sequencer, if that goes down, right, then like you're kind of hard down until that comes up. And so I think like for the first time, there's really an opportunity to make it really easy to launch these crypto computing environments in the cloud and make that available for anybody to develop on. And I think that is kind of the core value prop is super hard to do today. I think if you have a really good team, let's say like 3 to 6 engineers, maybe you can get there. That's contingent on like being able to hire those folks and maybe getting some help from Optimism or like whichever, you know, rollup that you're working with. And I think what Conduit does is, you know, we've done all of the hard bits and we're continuing to improve it, make all of the automation, reliability, scalability better, such that the end customer, instead of wrangling all of the stuff just to get off the ground, they can just focus on their core product and making that really great. And I think, you know, the cloud really helped accelerate kind of the Web2 boom over the past decade. And I think there's an opportunity for rollups and, you know, RaaS platforms to do something similar for crypto.
And yeah, I just want to double click on the importance of developer experience here and the role that Conduit plays. Because, I mean, let me know if you agree, but it seems to me that the need for developer experience tooling is even greater today than it ever was. And really, this comes from this transition towards a modularization of the stack, where we're now not doing everything on one large monolithic chain, but we have rollups that are specialized for specific applications. We have specialized DA layers. And is it fair to frame RaaS as broadly kind of a rebundling of the stack and repackaging of the stack in a way that can reach more developers by improving or addressing the pain points that come with all these different Lego blocks that are stacked on top of each other?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think like in the long run, yes. And I think it mostly depends on your time frame of how you're kind of looking at it. And I think in the short term, as a startup, you only have so much, you know, there's a common kind of Web2 phrase, which is like, you only have so many innovation tokens and like where you choose to spend them is really important. And like, I think one of the things that we spend a lot of time thinking through is like, what is worth supporting? And importantly, like, I think it's a real mistake to boil the ocean at the beginning. I think that's just a fast path to a product that nobody really wants and is kind of lowest common denominator. And so I think like in the short run, RaaS will, I mean, in my opinion, I think the kind of ideal strategy here is to focus on making at least like one really good stack and making it production ready. It's like a non-trivial amount of effort to do that. And then I think using that wedge, you can then expand into this like platform that then offers, you know, other types of rollups, other types of services, you kind of name it. And I think long-term, in the same way that AWS has all of these Lego blocks and like developers can kind of just paste them together, I think rollups as a service are really like to maybe reduce it down is kind of AWS for crypto. And that's kind of the opportunity that we're excited about. And I think it's the opportunity that a lot of folks see.
That's great. And I think, Brennan, we've spoken about this before, but it does seem like there's a large difference between spinning up a local test net and really having a fully fledged production ready roll up. And I'd love if, you know, I'll pose this to either of you, but really what is the difference between those two and what batteries need to be included to get to a production ready roll up? And I'm assuming those are offered under the suite of Conduit's products.
I've had the opportunity to come at this a little bit from both directions. I've probably spun up Bitcoin D for the first time almost 12 years ago and have been running a lot of this stuff locally, just in a rack in the closet at home for that whole time. And then at Radar, which is probably best known for our user-facing products like Radar Relay that we built, we've also built a variety of sort of blockchain as a service kind of products, both on the public and private blockchain side, and ran some of the early like validator infrastructure there. So I get a cool opportunity to play around with a lot of this stuff when it first comes out, just trying to spin it up locally and kick the tires and see what it can do. Then I've also seen just all the additional work that needs to go into hardening these things and managing just all the monitoring and upgrades in order to get to the point where it's a high availability piece of infrastructure that you can actually rely on to build a product. And so for on the roll up as a service side of things, as you mentioned, the stack here is getting a lot more complicated. And I think that's really necessary for roll ups to provide the better user experience that you'll need to bring this flood of new sorts of applications into the blockchain space, which is great for users, but it also means that for these companies that may not have a big dedicated team that's going to be able to run all this stuff in production and manage it all, the roll-up as a service provider has a really cool opportunity to step in and to run all that for them and really reduce the burden there and just increase the range of the sort of products that might end up getting built in a roll-up.
Just to be as specific as possible, Andrew, are you able to lay out some of the very specific services and things that Conduit does? Like, let's say a developer wants to come in and build a roll-up. It's like, great, it's super, super easy, collapse the cost slab. Like, what's actually involved in that process specifically?
Yeah, and Arbitrum recently released their like Orbit product, or at least kind of the self-serve version, where you can spin up a testnet on Arbitrum Gurley. And they make it super easy, and like you kind of spin up this local version of Arbitrum. And I think like the kind of like misconception here is just because it is easy to spin up and it works on your laptop doesn't mean that like that's all there is to it. And I think like I see a lot of that kind of narrative on Twitter and like more generally that like RAS going to zero meme. But I think like when I'm talking to customers, you know, I often get this question. I think like Brandon gave a brilliant answer earlier. And I think like ultimately what I ask them to do is like, if you don't believe that RAS has kind of a value add, just try spinning one up yourself in production and then come back to me when you kind of realize that's too hard. To get into specifics, I think like if we start from like this Arbitrum Orbit experience, for example, so this spins up like a local node, I think like step one is, so this is running on my laptop. It's like not available to anybody else. How do I take this and then put it into the cloud? And obviously, people are using Docker and like containers, but the only like real infrastructure that lets you do that in kind of a customized way is Kubernetes. And I don't know if you guys are familiar, but like Kubernetes is generally known as kind of this complex beast. And I think a lot of people kind of shoot themselves in the foot when they're trying to use it. And so there's, you know, some skill in kind of running essentially these stateful services, an automation platform that, you know, was really built for stateless services. So I think that's like step one. Step two is like figuring out the kind of scalability and reliability story. So I think like a good example is this Arbitrum Orbit thing kind of spins up a single sequencer, which also doubles as like the kind of read RPC. But I think like very quickly, if you're going to run this in production, you probably want HA for your sequencer so that like, you know, if a meteor hits a data center, you're not having downtime. And ideally, it's kind of a quick failover. It's not kind of this long manual process. And so figuring out how to automate that. And then I think like the biggest thing is probably like read load, and like, you know, blockchains are notorious for how unoptimized they are. And so when folks are running, you know, expensive read queries or like ETH calls or things of that nature, you need to make sure that you have the hardware to support that and to auto scale to that demand. And that's kind of a completely separate problem of like, how do you then auto scale these, you know, read nodes in production? Again, like state is there, so it's probably too expensive to sync a new node from like Genesis. So you have to figure out how to like snapshot these disks and then like create disks from that. But like, oops, you can't snapshot this thing while it's running, because then the database isn't going to be consistent. And so again, like as you're kind of shipping this thing to production, it's just kind of fractal in terms of the number of twists and turns that you have to go down to actually deliver a good product. And I think like, I haven't even mentioned things like security or operations yet, where like today, almost all rollups have some form of like privileged like key or like multisig. And so you have this very real question of like, how do you secure these keys? What is the worst case if somebody gets access to them? Do you have monitoring and alerting to make sure that you know? And how do you recover from that situation, right? And getting into operations, again, like these aren't just things that kind of sit there. These are like live kind of things on the blockchain that you need to top up with Ethereum. And so like, do you have all these operations to make sure that you're topping up the right wallets, making sure that they have enough ETH because that's necessary for running the chain? And then like doing all the accounting to figure out like, you know, did you actually make a profit or not, right? So I think, again, like very fractal in terms of the number of problems, especially as you get to mainnet, that just aren't clear really until you get there. And I think that's been one of Conduit's primary advantages, is I'm pretty sure we're the only RAS with deployments on mainnet, and that experience has just been invaluable.
I think there are some interesting parallels between the rollup space and rollups as a service and private blockchains. You can go on CoinDesk and scroll back through a couple years worth of articles of different public companies and government organizations doing these evaluations of blockchain technology for different business needs. And private blockchains are in a similar situation where anybody can pull the repo down and run the software and have a blockchain right there on their laptop. But back in the private blockchain days as well, that's not what you'd see would happen. Instead, they would go out and bring in these outside companies in order to set all this infrastructure up for them and run it all and configure it all and manage and maintain it all, because it really is a big step to go from just something running locally to something that's publicly accessible and well-maintained and high availability.
That's great. And I think it segues nicely into something else we wanted to ask you about, Andrew, but specifically related to your user segmentation and where you're seeing demand, I guess, at this current stage. I'm sure you've had a lot of conversations with prospects or teams that you're working with already. And I'm curious to hear, you know, are these largely crypto native teams, or are they a lot of enterprise, I would say more traditional teams that want to build on chain? And then in terms of the vertical, are you seeing a lot of demand for DeFi, or is this for the most part non-financial applications? And just would love to kind of get a sense of what you're seeing in the field right now.
Definitely seeing kind of like a bit of everything. Like if I were to break it down, I think like in terms of people that are launching kind of in the short term, I think it really is the crypto native folks. And I think like rollups are even getting to the decision point of like, we want a rollup versus like building on a shared layer versus like doing a side chain versus like doing something else. I think like requires a bit of like crypto nativity and like, you know, in some sense, knowing a little bit about how blockchains work. And so I think the most forward-thinking teams that we've met with, and certainly like our customers, have been of the crypto native variety. I do think generally there is interest from like more traditional tech companies, but I think it'll lag. And like, I think they probably just need to see it work in production. And I think the decision-making process is just a bit longer because there's more of a kind of technical catch-up that needs to happen. I think another point here is, again, like Web2 companies striving for what I believe is like more of a Web2 native experience, where they might require a little bit more tooling or services or integrations on top to make the blockchain work like they want to for their application, whether that's like a account abstraction or like gas relayers or whatever on top to actually facilitate those experiences. And I think those are just some of the pieces that are kind of coming together today. But moving on to like specific verticals, honestly, if you asked me 3 to 6 months ago, I would have said like, it just has to be DeFi, because like rollups in some sense are, again, Blockspace is really all about like valuable transactions. I think rollups aren't the cheapest thing to launch today. And I think this will obviously get much better with EIP 4844, but it's non-trivial expense. And that's where, you know, DeFi companies have a bunch of money. And like, I think they, in some ways, have the most incentive to explore new computing models to build better applications, because it's just so punishing on any shared layer where the focus is on composability, which means that, you know, unless you're like this core protocol or a core platform, like you just get commoditized so easily. And I think rollups in some sense, you know, really offer a competitive moat in terms of there's some L2 native asset moat, there's just asset moat in general, because like bridging is really quick, but withdrawing is a little bit slower. And there's the fact that you can build like a differentiated application versus needing to optimize for gas on, you know, whatever layer on, because it's so competitive. But I think 3 months ago, yeah, Zora reached out, and you know, it just wasn't an application that I'd really considered. I think when thinking about things like NFTs, it's like all of the NFTs exist on L1. So how do you kind of solve this bootstrap problem of like the network effects of all these marketplaces on L1? But I think like Zora came at it from a really different angle, where they're minting like L2 native assets, and it's, you know, more of a social kind of consumer play. So that was like a very pleasant kind of surprise. But I think like generally what I've seen is, again, the applications that will launch today are, and like I think for blockchain in general, are going to have some sort of tie back to value, because ultimately like blockchains are these fee constrained ledgers and you're competing for space in those blocks. And so if the things you're doing aren't valuable, you know, maybe blockchain isn't a great fit for that model.
Brandon, I'm curious what you think about Andrew's answer. Like, there's all these different rollup ecosystems, different providers. Like, do you think there will be some segmentation based off of the types of projects? Like, again, just looking at the L1, how the L1 ecosystem evolved. Solana, for example, focused a lot on cheap transactions, traders, DeFi. With L2s, I think it's probably too early to say. Arbitrum has a lot of native DeFi activity. The OP stack is, I would say, a larger variety, but is attracting a lot of companies, a lot of startups. Curious if you have any thoughts overall.
One way to reframe the question is why there haven't been more blockchain as a service platforms already. I think that one ecosystem where I'm just really surprised there isn't more infrastructure like this is the Cosmos ecosystem. It's sort of an interesting question to me why there isn't a Cosmos as a service provider that can just spin up networks like these for app chains that are interested in building out some sort of a blockchain backend. And I'm curious to see if this rollup as a service model, which I think is going to work really well for just widening the sorts of companies that can make use of this infrastructure, whether that causes like a bit of a renaissance where other ecosystems realize the value of having service providers like this that can spin these sorts of things up and maintain them and make them more accessible. I think there are some folks out there who believe that games and social applications and lots of other non-financial applications could find a home in an app chain, you know, whether that's a sovereign app chain or a rollup of some sort. I think that right now that seems unlikely, because when we talk about cost savings in a rollup, maybe it's a 10x cost savings, but to really bring in other sorts of higher volume, lower value applications, I think you're going to need to do a lot better than that. There is a lot of interesting stuff in the pipeline that might get us there. So if we get 4844 or EIP 4488, just things that are going to reduce transaction call data cost, other like lower cost data availability layers coming online, either native within Ethereum or externally through something like Eigenlayer or Celestia. I think those sorts of things may get the cost down to the point where we can revisit this a little bit and see if it makes sense to bring even more applications on that may have lower value transactions, where there's less maybe competition over the time value of block space and less MEV to extract to help pay for it all. But I think that, yeah, some of those things will be gated by significant reductions in the underlying costs to run these things. And, you know, some of these ZK rollups may provide some interesting opportunities there as well by just substantially reducing these costs.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And pointing out the Cosmos, why there is nothing like this in Cosmos, I think is an interesting observation and something that, you know, working in Cosmos, we are now realizing is very needed. But do you think that there's a dynamic here where because you're inheriting a much more decentralized DA layer, but you can still recreate the benefits of these application specific chains, this has opened up maybe a new segment of users that want to keep alignment with something like Ethereum and can use that in their marketing, but still get the benefits of an application-specific chain, specifically optimizing for a use case, as well as the sort of control that an enterprise might want to have? And I guess I'll pose that to the group.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I think like Cosmos is super interesting, like definitely when we're exploring ideas for like Conduit, Cosmos has certainly came up. I think like there are a lot of interesting things at the application layer, and like certainly certain app SDKs or whatever could make really interesting like rollup targets on top of Ethereum. I think like the core questions today are mostly around like production readiness for some of these like chains. And I think that's where, you know, in some ways, like I think both Optimism and Arbitrum have kind of learned this lesson is that you really want to be running like just Ethereum, right? I think they both started with, you know, some slightly different version of Ethereum. And I think both have found their way to basically becoming Ethereum equivalent. And I think in much the same way that like JavaScript and the browser just have these like massive network effects, you know, integrated everywhere, all of the devs, all of the users, I think Ethereum and the EVM kind of have that same type of moat, where again, all of the assets, all of the devs, all of the network effects. And so I think one of the challenges with these kind of Cosmos SDKs or where you can like heavily customize something is like, one, like, are you going to find devs and like the tooling and like all this other stuff that is going to work with it? And two, I think anytime you kind of like customize something, there's increased risk for things like security or technical risk in terms of has it ever really been done before? And so I think we in some ways have to walk before we can run here. And I think rollups will, in these like early days, I think lean towards EVM only. And then as we become more comfortable with different types of computing models, you know, I think we'll see more experimentation. I think one area in particular that is exciting is like Starkware, where, you know, there's a bunch of like ZK EVM rollups out there, which are kind of similar, but maybe, you know, a little bit too expensive today or sacrificing on compatibility. But I think Starkware is really interesting in that, you know, it's a computing model especially designed for kind of ZK circuits. And I think there's an opportunity there to build applications that, you know, you wouldn't be able to, you know, on an EVM chain that, you know, I think will be unlocked by that technology.
For some of the initial customers that you're seeing for Conduit, what degree of customization are they looking for at this point in the game? Is it still pretty much a vanilla like OP stack that you're launching? Or are you seeing interests in making some changes to how that all works?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing interest in customization. I think it really depends on the company. And like some of them are novel and interesting. But like, I think, again, like these rollup systems are rather complicated. And so customization, it's a trade-off between one, compatibility, and then two, like certain changes, you might need to re-audit the entire system because you're making a core change to how like, you know, layer two is derived, for example. And maybe on like kind of a funnier note, I think like something that we see very often is, and maybe I can say it once here and I don't have to explain it again, is I think a lot of rollup customers want to use their native gas token, or their native token is kind of the gas token. And I think like it's fundamentally, you know, one of those unsustainable things where, you know, if you actually map out like where do the token flows go, it just ends up being users buy your token, they pay for rollup gas, and then like the sequencer, you know, it has to pay DA costs in ETH. So like it needs to immediately sell your tokens and like hopefully that covers the cost. And then if it doesn't, it's like the rollup customer, right, that has to like fund those costs. So I think like to me, that feels like a very unsustainable model and like probably not a good reason to launch your own rollup. But yeah, I think to answer your question, I think most customizations, I think like generally aren't make or break, and like folks are totally fine launching the vanilla OP stack. We do see some like experimental ones that are like interesting, but I think like early and would require like significant work to make sure that the chain was still secure.
Obviously, Conduit, I think you guys have aligned yourself helping chains launch in the OP stack. Like, how did you think through that decision? Like, what was the process like to get to know the team?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Paradigm is an investor in both Conduit and Optimism. So I think them being able to facilitate that intro, I think was really helpful because I think there's already kind of some mutual trust. And I think like importantly, any stack that we would choose, we would be investing like a ton of time and like engineering resources into. So like, you know, it's very much in some ways like a capital, like you're thinking like an investor, like what opportunities are available to me? Which ones do I think will have the most success? And I think in terms of the stars aligning, like Optimism kind of made the most sense here, where I think they were most open to kind of this multi-chain or kind of roll-up centric kind of world. Whereas I think a lot of other folks kind of didn't get it. And then two, I think they were on the cusp of launching kind of the new version of the stack. They're calling it Bedrock. And so that was coming to fruition just as actually I was starting Conduit. And so the timing just kind of really aligned, where I think they had a really interesting vision for the product with Superchain. They really believed in kind of this roll-up centric world. And I think like there was kind of some complementary business goals here where, you know, they were very much focusing on kind of getting this new stack to production. And, you know, we had done all this hard work in making automation really easy to do. And so the combination of two, I think, was really powerful in being able to, you know, instantly distribute this new stack to anybody that wanted to run it.
So Optimism was first to the sort of multi-chain, you know, super chain type model. But more recently, we've seen basically all of these roll-up ecosystem providers announce something similar. I think we already mentioned Arbitrum Orbit, Starknet announced their stack recently. Celestia has some tools that they're putting out. So what do the incentives look like for a roll-up as a service provider for going a bit wider in the offering? And when do you think about adding support for some of these other ecosystems?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think like it ultimately comes down to two things. I think it's one, bandwidth. I think like, again, it's underrated how much like engineering effort goes into making these things scalable and like reliable. And like a roll-up as a service, you know, again, you really need to offer like this all-in-one offering where you have the sequencer, you have the RPCs, you have the block explorer, you have the transaction tracer, because frankly, like you need all those things for a chain to be real. And it's just kind of raising the floor for devs that build on top of you. So yeah, I think there's one around the engineering bandwidth, but then two, I think there's a question of like demand. And like, I think the key thing we think about again is like, it's very much from like an investor standpoint, which is if I invest in this thing, what is the upside? And so like maybe a good example here is like offense versus defense. So if, for example, there's a roll-up stack that was going to offer something that was like 10x different or like better than an existing stack we're running, like that is in some ways like a huge no-brainer, right? Because that, you know, meaningfully opens up the customer segment. And then on the defense side, I think there's, you know, you maybe want some redundancy in terms of like the types of stacks that you run in order to kind of balance risk. Because I think each of these roll-up providers has a certain roadmap, a certain way of operating, and that might be aligned with you, that might be unaligned with you. They might execute really well, or they might like fizzle out. And so these are like the types of questions or like the types of things that I think about when, you know, thinking what to actually invest our kind of engineering effort into.
So you mentioned some of the services that you need to bundle in order to have a complete offering. So things like a block explorer, things like transaction tracers as well, you mentioned. Could you talk a little more about that and maybe talk about other opportunities to add other services that could be a value add to a customer?
Yeah. So I think like when you're building or like developing on a chain that is like well known and exists, you maybe take for granted that all the tooling exists, right? Like I think people really like Etherscan, people really like Tenderly, Dune, of course. And like in some ways, like a lot of these products just maybe aren't built for a multi-chain world, at least one where like a new chain is launching every month. I think the frequency will increase as time goes on here. And so I think one for us, you know, we wanted to make sure we had the kind of like minimum amount of infra there to make the chain usable and so that folks had tools. But I think increasingly it's representing an opportunity to kind of upend the current market structure. And so like I think we're starting to see this with like some new companies. Maybe if I were to give a shout out to like GoldSky, for example, they're a data indexing tool that makes it really easy for like new chains to kind of spin up on and is like hosted versus like incumbent services like the Graph, which I think their hosted services maybe aren't as good anymore and want you to use their decentralized network. But I think more generally, there's a huge opportunity, I think, for one, a new class of companies that embraces kind of this multi-chain world where new environments can kind of get spun up on demand and like being able to integrate very quickly with those to provide services. And then two, I think like the natural question here, and I think where Brandon's really going with this is like, what additional services do we add to Conduit? I think there are some obvious ones around like the core offering where maybe you offer like a multi-chain API, right? Instead of like different RPC APIs, it's just like one, which makes it a lot easier to handle. But I think like ultimately, it'll come down to like what the market structure looks like. And I think we're very happy to like partner with companies that are building best in class services. Like we don't want to like compete with great products when we can thrust on something that doesn't have anything serving that kind of need. And so I think for us, it's mostly a let's see like who executes well and let's kind of like partner there. And then for areas of where there's an obvious gap or an obvious kind of compounding advantage for Conduit or economies of scale, I think that's where you'll kind of see our investment.
Really well laid out there. Last podcast, we actually had Scott on talking about how if you look at the roll-up ecosystem as this value chain, there's all these different stakeholders. Each one is doing something very specific to begin with, but eventually might use that as a wedge to expand into other services, as you said. And sort of based on that, I want to go back to an earlier point you made, which is how you talked about you'll support other chains and do other services and print products based off customer demand, which I think makes a lot of sense. But I want to ask, to what extent do you think, as developers continue to use Conduit, as you guys are the gateway and the first endpoint for a lot of these folks, what extent can you drive people towards ecosystems and products and services that Conduit wants to?
Yeah, that's certainly, you know, something that we've seen. I think like there's the version today and then there's the version in the future. And I think like the version today is, you know, we are in contact with a lot of these forward thinking companies that want to offer rollups. And I think given how early it is today, I think one of the roles I play is really just like tech advisor. And so helping, you know, our customers actually deliver a successful chain. I think the Conduit part we obviously spent a lot of time on, but I think is we're quite happy with where it is. And then I think areas of improvement where we can help on top of that are connecting our customers with other service providers. And so like you'll see a lot of common ones like fast bridging or like data indexing or, you know, off-chain oracles. Again, because we kind of get to see everything in terms of like the early roll-up customers, we have a good idea of like who's good to work with, who's maybe not so good to work with, and like what the incentives are. And so like one of our roles today is like, we just want to help our customers succeed. And that means there's like a mutual kind of incentive here to work with great kind of service providers. I think longer term, you know, I think having, yeah, Amazon has this, Google Cloud has this, but you can just have a marketplace for these plugins where anybody can one click add these things. And there are various like revenue models for that. But I think just having that distribution channel, I think will be really powerful.
I think that idea of a marketplace model makes a lot of sense. And maybe just to ask more directly, in today's environment, is Conduit the first touch point? Or for the most part, is the OP Labs team referring teams to you? And how do you see that evolving over time?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. You know, in the early days, I think it was a lot of Conduit kind of doing all of the first touches. I think as things have kind of matured, it's closer to like 50-50 now. But I think, you know, maybe in the future, Optimism has a huge brand. But I think what they're doing with Superchain and Base has really kind of attracted a lot of attention. And I think, like, my sense is in the future, like, you know, a lot of first touches will probably be coming from Optimism. And that's one of the reasons why we're really excited to partner with them and collaborate with them kind of so closely, is I think there's really kind of a mutually reinforcing partnership here. And I think, like, we have an opportunity to expand the market together versus trying to compete and, yeah, competing away margins and ultimately making probably like an inferior product. And so that's what I'm really excited about with respect to Optimism, is kind of collaborating for the long term and helping them kind of achieve their vision for the Superchain.
If a lot of the value does end up accruing to the roll-up as a service provider who kind of owns the customer relationship, do you foresee any tension with these roll-up developers?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic. I think time will ultimately tell. I think there are a lot of factors at play. You sometimes see these Twitter threads fly by where, like, again, there are a lot of, I think, dynamics at play around incentives and like where folks want to go. But I think something that is very hard to analyze and easy to underrate, I think, is just like how good the teams execute. And like, I think ultimately your advantage is going to be how well you execute and how much better you are than competitors. And I think using that as the ultimate kind of bargaining chip over anything else market structure wise will be important for Conduit, but ultimately also for like roll-up developers. And I think it's in a state where there's very good reasons to cooperate, but there's also reasons for each team to continue to excel and execute really well in order to kind of maintain the kind of current dynamic. So Brandon just asked about Conduit token, and we have no plans to launch a token. It's not something we've thought about very deeply. I think my general kind of initial response is like probably a bad idea for an infrastructure provider. I think like anytime an infrastructure provider has done this, it has resulted in like a worse quality of service. And so I think the ultimate question for Conduit is like, is there an area where a token would actually like improve the product? And like, if so, like that would be cool. I just don't know that I see it today. And so that's, yeah, I think my opinion right now is like probably not token, but obviously we'll have to see, you know, how that evolves.
I think that makes a lot of sense, especially for an infrastructure provider. And it does touch upon kind of the areas of value capture within this roll-up ecosystem. And I guess I think about it in kind of three buckets for Conduit specifically. And one is around execution and the sequencer hosting. So the actual direct revenue earned by the roll-up. Two is around all these additional infrastructure services that you could provide. And three is really the kind of white glove service that you offer to these teams in helping them manage, you know, first of all, the decision of the stack that they want to build on, and then on an ongoing basis, helping them through, say, something like technical upgrades, right? Anytime the OP stack upgrades to stay within the law of chains as they've laid out, you need to help them migrate with the rest of the OP superchain. And so, yeah, I would just love to hear about how you're thinking about the business model for Conduit across those three buckets, where RaaS providers will play most commonly.
Yeah, that's tough. I think, like, again, I think this is probably like a depends on your time horizon kind of thing. And I think a lot of this hinges ultimately on, I think, upgrades to the core Ethereum protocol, things like 4844 to massively reduce DA costs for rollups, as well as like ultimately the types of applications that launch on their own rollups. And I think if you look at the rollups that we have today with like Zora and like Gitcoin and others, it's unclear that there's a ton of MEV there to extract, because these are kind of like isolated apps. And I think the kind of core question is like, as these domains expand and as they differentiate, how much cross-domain MEV is there going to be? And I think ultimately, that's a question for like sequencer revenue. MEV maybe has like a bad word. I don't mean like sandwiching your users or things like that. I think like maybe a straw man example is plugging into Flashbot Suave to provide users protection as well as to extract, you know, MEV. And I think that will have a real bearing on like long-term revenues from the sequencer. And I think that will ultimately inform how the other parts of the business model kind of stack up and like where to invest more time, right? Because I think like if we end up in this world where lots of cross-domain stuff, lots of cross-domain MEV, like you just really want to lean into that because that might dwarf any kind of SaaS revenue you have. On the other hand, if we kind of end up in this place where everybody's kind of paying for their own block space, but because these are so differentiated, there's not a ton of cross-domain MEV, then you might see more of a traditional style like cloud platform where you really lean into the SaaS side of things and like focusing on upselling additional services, other integrations, things like that. But I think generally the business model here for kind of anyone interested is there's obviously some form of hosting fee for like hosting the rollup and any additional cloud services. And then, you know, rollups, especially RAS, you know, providers are in a great position to earn a percentage of sequencer fees.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And it does seem like there's a lot of flavors of this, whether you add a margin on top or whether you allow it to be kind of a flat SaaS fee or whether you take it directly out of the rollups token revenue. And I'm curious to hear, like, have you given a lot of thought to this or have you chosen a model today to lead with, given that the amount of uncertainty around, say, some of these transaction fees and how they look in the future?
Yeah, I think like we today have kind of set ourselves up for both and definitely want to capture the upside of, I think, sequencer fees, but also recognize that we might live in a world where that might not come to fruition the way we think it does. And so it's kind of like a two-pronged approach of build great services to ensure that customers enjoy the platform and kind of see the value while kind of like figuring out ways to, I think, expand like what kind of value is possible across domains in crypto. And I think that is like ultimately, I think the most interesting thing again is like all of this cross-domain activity. I think Superchain, you know, falls into that. I think things like Suave fall into that. Today, it's like super unclear how it's going to play out. But I also think that perhaps crypto is fundamentally uninteresting if there isn't a lot of this cross-domain MEV. And so it's definitely something that we're betting on today.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I see some tension there as it relates to shared sequencers. You know, there's obviously a huge moat that could be built around a shared sequencer, given the amount of chains. The more chains that join, the more cross-composability they have, and then thus the more potential cross-chain MEV there is. And I'm curious, you know, have you started conversations with some of these third-party shared sequencers, or is this an area that you expect the roll-up frameworks themselves to want to play in if they don't try to, you know, directly compete on the RAS side? And yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on just where the shared sequencer landscape is today.
Yeah, I think basically like protocols or roll-up providers will really lean into, I think like, you know, they're good at protocol and like they're going to be leaning into ways to, you know, make interoperability possible at higher and higher kind of fidelities. And I think that just kind of makes natural sense because to the extent that you have good cross rollup interoperability, there is in some sense like a big network effect, right? I think that there are certainly questions around like how feasible some of this stuff is. And like, I'd say it's a very researchy kind of area. But, you know, I think there are also other versions of this where, just to throw out a straw man, like if Conduit were sequencing a bunch of these chains, you could in theory offer like an MEV boost style API for like all these chains, or eventually like plug into Suave with like Flashbots or like some third party, right? Like kind of shared sequencer. And I think those are kind of the two options. In terms of Brandon is asking demand for interop on the user side, that's a really good question. I think like in the early days, like the context it comes up in is really in like asset bridging, right? Because it's like, I want to get more liquidity to my chain. I need to bootstrap demand and like make bridging from any crypto environment like super easy to help bootstrap that. I think there have been some like experimental ideas around like interop either between like L1 and L2. For example, like Ribbon Finance, they have like Ribbon Vaults on like layer two, on like Optimism. And like, what if that could interoperate with Avo XYZ, for example? And so like whatever is in that vault shows up as like some orders in Avo, and like, you know, it's all kosher between like those rollups. And so I think like there's certainly been some demand. I think it's more speculative than something that, you know, you can really jump on today. And I think that just kind of speaks to the nature of where we are today, which is like it's very early in kind of rollup land. And we're still figuring out like what are the applications that are going to matter. And, you know, again, if they're going to be super differentiated, does interop matter? And, you know, in a world where interop really matters, like I'm very curious as to, you know, how that happens.
The demand for interop seems like a really fundamental question to just figuring out how this whole ecosystem ends up evolving. Because if you have fairly limited need for interop, then you can go sort of more sovereign chain style, where your costs are likely going to be lower because you're not paying for DA on Ethereum necessarily. And so it just seems to me that like a lot of the network effects that you might see, like a settlement rollup layer or an L1, are really dependent on how much demand there is for that sort of interop, both like top to bottom interop, like just getting your L1 tokens into your app chains, and then also just like inter rollup interop. And so depending on if there's a lot of demand for that, then there could be very strong network effects with sort of really creating a lot of demand to anchor all these app chains into the same place. Whereas if there's not, then a lot of these chains could be more free floating and kind of look a little bit more like the private blockchains of old.
Brandon, you're someone that I'm sure has, actually, I know you definitely have strong thoughts on this. How do you think about future demand in terms of interoperability? And what do you think? What's your opinion?
I think that for financial applications where your transactions have a lot of value, the interop story kind of tells itself. It's almost a question you don't even need to ask. Like clearly, if you have liquidity in different places and you have, you know, different financial instruments in different places, there's value in figuring out how to enable them to interoperate. Whether that looks like just bridging assets around or extracting MEV in a more or less atomic way, or there's like this co-processor idea where you have maybe complex application logic running in an L2, and then somehow the output of that causing something to happen on L1. Like there's just a lot of interesting ways for that to work. But just one of the questions I've always had about these non-financial applications is just around why they would be willing to pay the higher cost for this interop that they're not necessarily going to need to use. So if I build a social network or a game that has an NFT marketplace associated with it, if that just can exist in a vacuum and it's totally self-contained, then it just seems to me like the willingness to pay will be much lower and things like that will want to be on their own little app chains. And if it's the case that there are just a lot of applications that look like that, it may be that a couple years from now, we have hundreds of applications that are using blockchains, but that not a lot of the value ends up accruing back to some of these public networks. That's sort of my preliminary thoughts on it in any case.
A lot of the benefit of crypto gaming is the fact that you can potentially move a lot of really valuable assets between different platforms, different games, right? Like if crypto gaming is just happening in independent silos, that's missing like one of the main potential value props of crypto gaming.
I honestly don't understand the crypto gaming space very well, so I could just be showing my ignorance there. It does make sense that you'd need to have some sort of crypto native value prop there to make it make sense to use a blockchain at all. So I guess I'd have to concede that point.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat as Brandon here. I think like crypto, I guess it ultimately depends on like how you're going to build it. I think ultimately like blockchains are really about like value-based kind of interactions. And like most interactions in games aren't that, except maybe besides like assets. So like one construction you might see is the game is like off-chain or whatever, has some method for posting your assets on-chain. And then like there's a marketplace, right? Like Steam Marketplace or something, but like on-chain to actually like trade these assets. But I think like outside of that, the shape of it doesn't seem to align with like what blockchains are good at, except maybe perhaps like new types of computing models. I think like Starkware is potentially one here where, given the kind of recursive nature of like ZK proofs and the ability to get really low costs and like high throughput, like gaming there might make sense. But, you know, I think we need to see probably like more activity and more demand there to really see that play out, because it's still early.
I think another interesting wild card in how the ecosystem and app chain rollups end up evolving is sort of the continued importance of these non-bearer assets. So all the real world assets are kind of a good example of that. You have things like Circle, USDC, where it's just being managed by a single company, and they can choose to plug in and issue and redeem their asset on whatever chains they want. So we see that they're using this sort of very simple, centralized mint burn model for bridging. And I think that model has a lot going for it when you're talking about assets that are fundamentally centralized. But if we end up in a situation where a lot of things don't need interop, and organizations that manage these non-bearer assets are willing to issue in a lot of different places, that could also have a pretty big impact on the network effects of some of this public infrastructure and these public networks. Because it could be that if you just want to spin up a secondary network, or sorry, a secondary marketplace for the assets in your game, or even for trading little chunks of private equity for your TradFi startup of some sort, maybe you can just do that with a sovereign rollup and hook up with USDC. And you don't need to necessarily pay for all these other portions in the stack that would give you interop that you don't maybe need. So I think that'll be a really key thing in deciding how this evolves and how this plays out.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I think, yeah, I guess one question I have around these more sovereign chains is, I think they're really interesting and there will be certain like use cases for them as Brandon lays out. But I think one question I have is like, what does the business model look like if there aren't going to be like a big on-chain fee component? Because I guess if you're a sovereign roll-up, maybe less of that business model baked in. But curious Brandon's thoughts here.
I think there may be a model for these non-financial applications where, you know, as you mentioned, there's not a lot of MEV to extract because these transactions do tend to be fairly low value. So you'll see models of the underlying infrastructure that are just very inexpensive to run that may be able to support some of these non-financial applications. But the real key thing there will be sort of cost reduction and how low you can get the cost to run all of this stuff. So I do have some of the same questions I think you do about the sort of willingness to pay there and where the revenue is going to come from. But maybe if we get some extremely cheap DA, data availability, then we can run some extremely cheap rollups that maybe have fewer interop features and maybe fewer guarantees of other sorts, but still, you know, get some of those benefits of having a solid DA underneath them and some of the other benefits of building on a blockchain. But that's my first guess about where we'll see less financial applications building, just given the current state of all the infrastructure. Because our existing rollups do reduce costs quite a bit, but they're certainly not free. And I don't think that we should expect to see things that are anchoring into Ethereum ever become so cheap to the point where you could do transactions that have little or no value and still have the business model work out.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And like, I think, I don't know if I mentioned this, but like one of the kind of evolutions of Conduit in the early days was kind of looking at exactly this type of use case. And I think one variant of it is ephemeral kind of like game chains. I mean, you can call them rollups or like side chains, but fundamentally it's instead of worrying about cost or things like that, you can run a super fast, basically free kind of like node on the side and just lean into some of the other aspects of blockchains, which are, you know, they're public. They have this like API that anybody can interact with, and you can compose these applications kind of natively. And I think ephemeral gaming, where again, like you want the super cheap transactions and leaning into like the upsides of blockchain, maybe like minus the revenue model, was like something we explored and definitely saw some interest in. I think it'll be interesting to see as kind of the multi-chain world evolves, whether or not that will become like kind of a periphery model or like a new type of model that is maybe a little bit more, I think, like weaved throughout these kind of blockchain networks than we think today.
I come from this sort of maker DIY world where we ran IRC servers and email servers and Matrix chat and all these different like federated servers and wikis and things just for fun with really no revenue model ever. So I've always kind of had this side interest in blockchain and how it maybe enables communities to come together and run their own infrastructure for things, even if there's not like an obvious revenue model for a service provider. And so it'll be interesting to see if like AppChain can open up those opportunities, even if those opportunities don't have as much revenue associated with them as these big financial applications that'll want to plug into these highly interop capable roles.
Yeah, and I think maybe one thing to add here, I think we talked about the value prop of these more sovereign models and also the non-financial models, but coming from the Cosmos side, we've seen really that the benefits of the sovereign model is about optimizing the block space for your application. And I guess the objective here is not to drive fees at the blockchain transaction level, but more at the application level, because people actually want to, you know, use your application because of what you've been able to really optimize with the chain. And I'm curious if you think, you know, I'll just post this to the group, but we've seen a lot of vanilla EVM chains right now on the roll-up side, and whether or not some of these ideas from Cosmos may come over at some point, not to drive revenue to say, you know, just MEV and whatnot, but also just to enable better products and how important it is to be able to customize the VM or the block space in any way to drive users, essentially.
I think we've seen from Cosmos that it's possible to do really interesting things if you control the whole stack and can kind of do what you want to modify it for the needs of your application. But it can be pretty expensive to do so. You need quite a bit of expertise. And just looking across all the different applications that have deployed on Cosmos, only a handful of them, I think, have really taken this to the limit and done things they couldn't just do in the EVM natively. So I think there'll definitely be trade-offs that customers need to look at in terms of, you know, how optimized and fit for purpose does the infrastructure need to be versus like how much they're willing to pay to get it done, either through internal teams or through external consultants and service providers. But cost is always going to be a big factor there.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. Cost and both competency, because there are very few teams that really want and are competent enough to leverage the full stack. And I'm curious, Andrew, are you thinking about to reduce the amount of complexity and while still giving the benefits of maybe, I would say, vertical optimized frameworks, are you thinking about creating these out-of-the-box frameworks for specific use cases? Or are you just trying to basically offer the widest suite of plug-and-play components and leave that up to the teams themselves?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's tough to say today. What we want to be careful about is, are we a services company or are we kind of a platform? And so I think that's where it gets tricky in terms of, you know, how much engineering effort you kind of invest on a case by case basis. And like, I think maybe an instructive data point here is like StarkX, where I think very much kind of a services thing and kind of an interesting business model actually, but I think like very hard to scale. And I think that's why they ended up going with like StarkNet and kind of Cairo and kind of building this open kind of ecosystem, because it's just frankly, like, I think in theory, it sounds really good to customize everything and optimize for specific applications. I think what's underrated is the amount of like effort that goes into that. And like, if you know, you treat any of these potential applications as like a startup, in some ways it's like much cheaper to just give your capital and then like you don't have to give them a ton of time. Whereas like, you know, engineering effort, time and all that stuff is just something that is very hard to kind of recoup. And so when I see RaaS providers talking about maximum customizability and like doing these types of services businesses, I'm usually a little bit skeptical of whether or not that will work in kind of a sustainable fashion, but definitely open to, you know, in the future, maybe we have a conduit specific rollup stack that you know, it's easy to modify and kind of do all these things. But I'd say today it's like a little bit early to really kind of think through what that might look like.
We've covered a lot of ground here and honestly hit all the major themes. I think I wanted to at least two or three last questions. Like, what do you guys think this will all look like in 2-3 years? And by that, I mean, just like the rollup ecosystem broadly, like the value chain of in rollups, like how do you see the end state playing out?
So the vision that we see is like there are thousands of rollups on top of Ethereum. And ideally, Conduit is kind of sitting at the center of that. And I think, like, to Brandon's point, I think there is a lot of opportunity or interoperability opportunity, especially for DeFi apps. I think they'll definitely be possible. It just depends on the mechanism. And then I think ultimately, like, what's really interesting about having lots and lots of rollups, particularly for a platform, is the idea of like economies of scale. And so I think if you think about what like blockchain infrastructure today is, they've been designed for kind of these decentralized networks. But again, kind of tying back to what I believe is kind of the why now moment for rollups as a service and Conduit is rollups let you run crypto compute in a centralized manner that's verifiable on chain. And that gives you as an infrastructure provider an opportunity to run that in a much, much better way than you ever could on a decentralized chain. And I think this involves a lot of engineering work, a lot of like architecture work, but ultimately you can imagine one day like spinning up a rollup is as easy as like, you know, invoking a Lambda function, right? And like we have these serverless rollups, so they're very cheap, they're very easy to access. And like, you know, at the kind of extremes, like they can even be a lot more performant than the rollup software that we have today. And I think the opportunity to scale that with infrastructure and software, I think like shout out to Georgios for Reth, I think is kind of the major example of this, is kind of really pushing the performance frontier by making like massive software improvements. I think, you know, there's potentially even another 10x there in terms of decomposing the blockchain into its constituent parts and then being able to run it in ultimately kind of like stateless manner and scaling it really, really aggressively with just amazing infrastructure and hardware. And I think this has always been impossible previously because we run blockchains in a monolithic way, right? Everything runs on one box and there's a limit to how big a box can be. But I think through this decomposition, through this like new architecture, you have the opportunity to scale way beyond what is possible today.
Yeah, I think the rollup-centric roadmap is just really the most complete and coherent story we've ever had for how blockchain is going to scale and mature and really reach the masses. I've mentioned some of the questions I have around willingness to pay and the suitability for non-financial applications and some of those sorts of things. And some questions I have around where value will be captured and how much value will be driven to a lot of this public infrastructure and these public networks. What really rollups give us for the first time is these traffic isolated, fee constrained, you know, virtual machines where people can build whatever it is they want to build. And I think it's really up to providers like Conduit to see how accessible we can make all of this stuff and what kind of customers we can bring into the fold using these blockchains.
Cool. I think that's a really great note to end on. Andrew, Brandon, thanks a lot, both of you, for coming on. I think covered a lot of different topics. And yeah, I think this came out really well.
I have one just silly question. Who's your dream customer? Do you have someone you'd really love to be running infrastructure for?
My dream customer? That's a great question. I think, honestly, like Flashbots would be an incredible customer. I think any of these like tier one protocols, Uniswap is another good example. Although I think with Uniswap X, maybe makes that future less likely. I think like Flashbots is a really interesting kind of angle where, again, it's a little bit technical, but ultimately they're, you know, in some ways building the meta rollup for like all rollups as well as like other chains. And so I think just given that like level of like inception or like recursion there, we just have to make it happen. But I would say definitely Flashbots, both for, I think, like my fascination with what they're building. And I think the opportunity for it to make a huge impact on a roll-up-centric world.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Andrew, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.